Hey guys, Andrew Dowling here.
And Mitch Kurtz.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Ultimate Podcast.
Make sure to hit like and subscribe because we've got heaps more content coming out and it's really fun and great and we love it all.
Also very good.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Ultimate Podcast. I'm Andrew Dowling. Mitch Kurtz, my usual, in fact, mandatory co-host, is with me as always. Still yet to do a monologue, Mitch. Can we expect that from you at some stage?
I'll book it in during Christmas.
Sounds good. We've got something different for you guys today, which we're pretty excited about. Bit of a new angle for our podcast, but we're here to pass on the wisdom from those who actually know a thing or two, which is not Mitch or I. So it is our pleasure to have on the show with us today Dr. Omid Ansari, who is the founder and CEO of Hemp Gen Tech. Omid, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, gents, and thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'm a big fan of your podcast, and then it's the best thing, you know, just to listen to when you're driving from one trial to another one, and you're 3 hours on the road, and say, "All right, I'm listening to that. I'm learning that. You know, it's the best thing you can do."
Yeah. It's not hazardous from the falling asleep.
I was going to say it could be a good nighttime one. Little bit of CBD oil, put on AltMed, get a good night's sleep.
We're basically the indica of podcasts.
I'm going to talk about sativa here, though. So today.
Okay, good.
Well, we've got a few topics that we're going to be talking about cannabis or hemp as a fiber or as a crop, but I'm going to let Omid talk about that because he knows much more about that than us. So maybe, Omid, can we first jump in and can you let us know what your background, your qualifications are, and how you got into this space?
Sure. In 2004, when I started my PhD at Sydney University on quantitative genetics and biometrical genetics, actually, and breeding on wheat. And at the time, so it was a very hot topic of having a wheat variety that is basically low GI. It was a very interesting, you know, just basically journey, which I got another opportunity to visit Canada as part of my PhD study, where I ended up, after finishing my PhD, doing a postdoctoral degree with the University of Saskatchewan at the plant science department there, which I spent, you know, nearly 3.5 years there, including winters, obviously. And then it was a very rewarding experience there. From there, I joined North Dakota State University as a research scientist for some time. And then due to some family issues, I had to come back to Australia. And that was the time I joined a grains research and development corporation, or GRDC, if you know about them. So, and I was there for 6 years. Then I joined the biggest hemp company in Southern Hemisphere called Ecofiber. I'm sure you're familiar with or have heard of it.
Yeah.
And then up until very recently, which actually my last day at work with Ecofiber was end of October. And so not long ago, and then I started my own company called Hemp Gene Tech, which is a specialized on all aspects of hemp breeding, production, agronomy, and compliances. And we provide this service, you know, to our clients. Also, we provide, you know, seed certification service according to OECD seed certification scheme as well. So there are lots of things, you know, we offer, and then I'm trying, you know, just we are very keen to collaborate with like-minded people. And I'm quite keen, you know, to have a chat with you gents today.
That's great. So has your research primarily then been centered around wheat and hemp largely?
Well, you know, just my, I have, you know, over 20 years of experience across cereals, wheat, barley, and partly durum. But since 2016, I've been working on hemp. So, and what a journey it was. Yeah.
You know how to separate the wheat from the hemp.
Oh.
I think it's worth probably at this stage defining when you say hemp. What do you mean? I say that because depending on who you speak to, there's slightly different definitions of hemp, whether you're North American, whether you're European, or maybe from Australia. So I just wanted to get straight from the horse's mouth what definition of a hemp you're referring to, and how we divide maybe the different classifications that people are giving hemp out there.
Very good question, actually, Mitch. In Australia, or in my opinion, actually, you know, the hemp or industrial hemp is based on the intention and intended use. So if you're using it for fiber application or grain application, it should be considered industrial hemp. And anything else, you know, just if it's, you know, for medicinal or nutraceutical, should be considered as a something else. So, and obviously when you are talking about industrial hemp, there are some regulatory requirements that you need to meet, including THC threshold. And up until very recently in Australia, every state had they had their own threshold. And as of today, I know all of the states except one, so their thresholds become 0.5% for and 1% THC level. And I think Victoria is the last one, is just trying, you know, to finalize that or modify that legislation and go from there. So in the US is different story, as you exactly pointed out. So over there, everything with less than 0.3% THC is considered hemp, regardless of whether its application is for fiber, grain, or medicinal. And I think the easiest way to differentiate these is based on the application and end use. So that way, then if your intention is, you know, to use it and harvest it for medicinal, then you need to apply for a license from Department of Health. But if you need, you know, just you want to grow it for fiber or grain, obviously it falls under Department of Agriculture. And I think this is a good thing because in Canada, when was it? In a couple of years ago, don't quote me on it, you know, just exact date, they have changed the legislation and put everything, the cannabis plant, everything under one umbrella. And they basically it's managed by Department of Health, which is very, very cumbersome for breeders and then growers over there, especially when it comes to reporting. And it's because I was there, you know, just recently as part of my Norfield scholarship. So it was very difficult for them to report or, you know, just operate under that, you know, umbrella and environment.
Okay. So what, I mean, when we're thinking about the power of hemp, right? And we hear about it as, you know, well, it can be used in foods, it can be used in building materials. What do you love about hemp? What can you tell us that makes it different, or why should we be studying it and researching it?
Sure. I would say, what is it about hemp that you want, you don't like? So it's everything. It's like cattle.
No THC.
Well, there is an application for that as well. So, you know, just at least, you know, just in medicine, put it that way. So basically, you know, just always compare hemp to cattle. So nothing of hemp plant goes to waste, from the root to stem to biomass to flowers to seeds and everything being used. One thing that I really like about hemp is its carbon footprint and how sustainable a crop it is, because So with the amount of, you know, just, you know, carbon it sequestrated in his, it's, you know, the biomass, and comparing with the other crops, it's amazing, you know, just a crop, and it's a cash crop. So people sometimes consider the hemp as a rotational crop, and usually rotational crop doesn't mean it, you know, it's a cash crop. But by planting hemp as a rotational crop, which can fit very nicely with other crops, not only you get the, you know, just cash for the product that you harvest or crop you harvest, but also, you know, you just add a lot of benefits to your farm. So improving health of, you know, just your soil, and so many other things as well.
So one thing I've often thought about, and is probably I'm interested in, why would you not make something, you know, we're talking about what needs to be occurring in order to have a hemp plant versus a cannabis plant, let's say, and it's low THC. I mean, by the definition of having its intended use, you could technically grow THC and say, well, the intent is for it to be hemp because that's what I'm going to use it for, textiles and rope and whatnot. But I think, you know, it's widely accepted that it's this very low THC. I think in the States it's less than 0.3% THC. And Europe, I think it's less than 1 or 2. I can't remember, depending on where you are. But why not just use male plants for hemp, for example, so that there's no chance of having like a flowering plant that could be used for, let's say, if you're thinking about it from a drug contest text, misappropriation.
There are a few things here which, you know, I need to point it out. So one is that, you know, if you want, you know, to harvest the crop for fiber, so similar to the medicinal application, there is a, you know, just a right and optimum time of harvest. So that's been identified, and this is, you know, I'm not generalizing. This is, you know, if you want, you know, to get the highest biomass, usually it's been harvested at male flowering. So basically, there wouldn't be any seed set. So that's with that one. But again, so this is a very general statement. So when you know, just you break it down. So at the very, you know, just the next level would be, all right, do you want, you know, to use bast or outer layer of, you know, just that stem for producing garment and clothes and things like that? Or are you interested in the woody core part of it, which you call it herd? So that, again, you know, different timing, you know, just and depend on the varieties you need, you know, to have, you know, align your harvest with those criteria. Then again, you know, going back that the THC content. So it's like, you know, just you're driving a car and coming to a red light camera at midnight. So you can drive through and you may get around it. But, you know, the right thing to do is just stop. And then when the light is green, you know, start again. So yes, of course, you know, you can have a, you know, just a high THC line and it's just there. But at least in Australia, we know that, you know, your crop will be sampled by DPI. And then if the crop is hot or, you know, just, you know, the THC content is above the limit, your crop has to be destroyed. So that's another, you know, just conversation that we can have another session on it, you know, just whether, you know, just 0.5 is the, and you're having an absolute, you know, just figure the right thing, or should we include some standard deviation there, you know, just plus minus what? So still falls under that category. And I think, you know, initially when the legislation was written, at least in Queensland, where I'm based, so that's why, you know, it's the, they define different limits, 0.5 and 1%. So, and that's, I think, you know, just appropriate. And we, in my opinion, we should differentiate these from each other. And sooner or later, I think, in my opinion, the legislation would change, allowing growers to grow the crop not as a dual purpose, for multiple purposes, the grain, fiber, and then flowers as well. Because Hemp, although you know, just has a lot of benefits, but when you look at the gross margins and comparing to other crops, it's not that much different to other crops. So it needs to be something there to make it more attractive crop for growers to grow it.
So what about I'm so naive on this topic. Is there generally, like, I don't know exactly how many strains you've come across of hemp, but the strains, let's say, for example, I've had somebody give me hemp protein powder, right? And like, is the hemp that goes into, say, food products the same that's used to make rope or the same that's used in building materials? Or do you tend to find that there are certain genetics or strains that are best suited for each of those different types of applications?
So when I was, you know, just with the EcoFiber, for instance, I reselected a line called Eco-MS77, which is now, you know, just a leading dual purpose fiber variety in the US and in Australia as well. So you can have a dual purpose variety. So you can plant it for grain and then for fiber or both. But if you want to, you know, just grow it for fiber, so obviously when you do the breeding and selection and you want to grow it, then you're trying to increase the biomass as much as you can to maximize your return on that. When it comes to the grain, then at this stage, everyone's, you know, love to have a hemp seed. But within the next, you know, 5 years, customers would ask for a specific, basically protein profile or fatty acid profiles with, you know, just X number of, you know, just, you know, we're gonna just, you know, just this and that, you know, amino acids in it. And that's inevitable. It's definitely, we're not there yet, but that's the way that, you know, industry works towards it. It's like, you know, pulses in Australia. Very rarely anyone was aware of, you know, just availability of pulses in Australia probably 30 years ago. And now everywhere you go to any supermarket or restaurant, it's part of that, you know, just cuisine, or it's part of that, you know, just product development, you know, just package that they're trying to target people.
Okay.
That was my next question. I was going to say, you know, when we think about cannabis, we think about, you know, differentiation in terms of minor cannabinoids, acidic cannabinoids, terpenes, flavonoids, that kind of thing. And I was going to say, how do you differentiate a good hemp strain? Like, what makes you select one over the other? But you've kind of just answered that.
But so to summarize, so for if you're getting the fiber for building, you just want whichever hemp strain yields the most biomass so that you've got as much material to work with, right?
That was a very general statement. You know, if you talk to any grower, they always say yield is king. So that's the top priority for everyone, because that's where they get paid for that. So for instance, in canola industry, there are some specialty markets like high oleic acid, you know, canola, right? Which growers receive a premium for growing them, but, you know, just the yield usually is lower than others. So when it comes to hemp, so if you want to use it, for instance, hempcrete, definitely you want, you know, to have more of a herd content rather than, you know, the bast content. So, and then, you know, when you do the selection, you're selecting based on the plant characteristics that end up, you know, just having one, high yield, two, more herd content. And obviously within the herd, you know, there are lots of, you know, different characteristics that you can target. What's the amount of lignin, cellulose, hemicellulose, mineral content, all sort of things. And depends on, you know, your end use and end product, then you target your breeding and or aligning your breeding targets with that product.
I think the, Yeah, that makes sense. I think the other thing that might be good to differentiate, and there's probably nobody better to do this, is to actually take us through the difference between each part. I think there's a lot of confusion for many people out there over each part of the cannabis plant and what its uses might be. So, you know, people say, oh, I've been offered CBD oil, I've been offered hemp oil, I've been offered hemp seed oil, I've been offered cannabis plant juice, I've been offered all these different things, and people are like, which is the one that's going to do what, and how can I have that from an ingestible perspective? What are the options and where do they come from?
Well, you know, just so for any nutraceutical, usually the majority and concentration of cannabinoids, as you know, they're stored in trichomes in the flowers. And then there are less of concentration of those cannabinoids or trichomes on the leaf. So that's where, you know, just you want, you know, to harvest those trichomes. And, you know, just I think, you know, just very old method of, you know, just basically making hashish, basically was just purely based on collection of trichomes. And now these days, you know, just the machines can simply harvest, you know, just a crop and then separate, you know, those dust, if you like, and then process it, you know, through different methods, whether it's ethanol extraction, CO2 extraction for medicinal purpose. When it comes to the grain, then it's the same thing. So you can use the grain for different applications. So you can remove the shell, or they call them dehulling, and the nuts or heart, you can basically, you know, just use it with your breakfast, you know, mix it with yogurt, you know, you can make a pancake. But
these are they high fat at all?
They have a balance, very balanced ratio between omega-3 and 6. So previously, it was, everyone believed that, you know, if this ratio is very high, it's very good for your body. But, you know, a few years back, you know, they found that if the ratio between omega-3 and 6 is between 2 to 3 to 1, it's the ideal ratio, and hemp seed provide that ratio. The other thing you can do with the hemp seed, you can basically crush it and then extract the oil out of it. So, which is, you know, like, you know, olive oil. So it's an extra virgin a hemp seed oil. And because it has a fantastic, you know, just oil content of nearly 25%, or just give or take. And, you know, just fantastic, you know, ratio of omega-3 and 6, and it also has omega-9 as well. So it's a very healthy oil, and it's full of polyunsaturated fatty acid. But when it comes, you know, to the hemp seed as a source of protein, hemp seed possess all essential amino acids, and it's actually higher than any other, well, let me be careful about that, you know, just statement. It's very high in iron as well, so which is fantastic source for people who are on vegetarian or vegan as well. So there are lots of application when it comes to the grain as well. So let alone, you know, just millions of application for fiber as well.
No, I can attest to all this because I have a hemp oil that I put on my salad from time to time, and yeah, it is. It's quite healthy, if that's maybe not the right word, but it really does, to your point, contain a lot of healthy fats. Yeah, I try not to put too much on there, but I know that it can't be used as a cooking oil because
smoke points.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just curious. What is a typical? I know it's very very fresh, let's say, but what does a typical day at Hemp Gene Tech look like at the moment?
So when I was working for EcoFiber, I used to start, you know, just very early, around 6 a.m., and then by 3 o'clock I was dead, literally. And now my day starts at 5 and I finish midnight. So there are lots of meetings. So in the when I get out in the morning, so, you know, just start my computer, reading emails and so forth. We have a new a fluffy family member as well. So it just, you know, keep me occupied while I'm, you know, typing or replying to emails until everyone's up. And then the day starts, you know, just attending meetings, you know, just look at my schedule. Mm-hmm. And then soon I'll be starting my breeding trials across, you know, Australia. So from Queensland, New South Wales and Tasmania, this state. And when I, you know, started actually with Hemp Gene Tech, so I was overwhelmed with the support from the industry and those who I consider competitors, you know, and it was, I was overwhelmed, I'll tell you that. So, and I'm very grateful, and because I said, if I'm not successful in this, you know, position as a Hemp Gene Tech, I would move on, you know, to another industry. But,
you could possibly,
sorry,
you could possibly move to the cannabis industry.
It is cannabis industry, but low THC one.
That's what I mean. You could switch. You could switch to the dark side, the high THC.
Well, it's ironic you're saying that. You know, within the breeding program, I tried to reduce THC content of the hemp varieties by sometimes increasing the other cannabinoids. So through any other means that I have in hand, so whether it's a DNA marker, is you know, just through phenotyping or through chemotyping, any form of shape. Yeah, maybe one day. So we will add on to it. Actually, you know, I have a good collaborator from the dark side, if you like. And then they're very keen to work together because we plan on, you know, just making fantastic crosses between fiber varieties and, you know, just potent, you know, just material in the US. And yeah, see what's going to happen.
It's all very exciting. And it does seem to me, and I'm observing it a bit of a distance, that the hemp industry, not just here in Australia, but globally, is currently experiencing a resurgence. There seems to be just growing numbers of companies and in industry getting involved. Is that what you're observing as well?
Absolutely. It's not only there, so it's global. Mm. Basically recently I'm just trying to, you know, find this document. Here you go. So just to Federation of International Hemp Organization, I'm not sure if you're familiar with it or not. So basically it's an organization and the members are national representatives from each country. And recently they forecasted a 2000% increase in the hemp crop footprint by 2030.
Whoa.
And yeah. So, and then they said this would require 11.9 million acres of, you know, hemp production. So, I mean, at the moment, as we speak, I think, you know, last year the entire hemp production in Australia was only 5,000 hectares. So the plan is, you know, to reach 100,000 hectare by, I think, very, very shortly, 2030, and to reach that point, so you need adaptable varieties that meet a lot of, you know, criteria for growers to grow and provide some benefits to the basically investors and across the value chain, literally.
Are we sending hemp overseas? Like, are we exporting Australian-made hemp?
Ecofiber, you know, just started selling planting seed to US as of last year, and continuing on that one, it's a very good, seems like a good business model. But when it comes to products, It seems like, you know, domestic market is not saturated yet. So everything is produced, or at least as far as I know, is being used domestically for food side of it. With the exception of, you know, a couple of companies I know, they started exporting to Asia, for instance. And, you know, some companies is exporting to US. But when it comes, you know, to the food side of it, whether it's a protein or oil, because Canada is next to US and their cost of production are often less than Australia. So it's a bit difficult to compete there. So, and I'm not aware of anyone's exporting to Europe. So for food, but, you know, fiber export, you know, is happening. And we need, you know, more of a hemp processing, fiber processing facility in Australia to be able to export. There are lots of, you know, just buyers out there in Asia at the moment. They're willing, you know, to purchase and hemp fiber from Australia. But, you know, they need, you know, they're very particular about, you know, the specification that they need, really.
Yeah, I'm just curious. We talk about a lot, you know, THC and CBD when trying to define hemp. Is there much to do with minor cannabinoids like CBG, CBC, CBN, these types of thing? Like, I mean, technically, are we really just focusing on THC because that's the one that can be used recreationally when trying to define hemp? Do the other cannabinoids come into it at all? Like, what's your position on that?
As far as I know, you know, just other minor cannabinoids are not legislated at the moment. So basically, for instance, if you have a, you know, variety that is high in CBDVA, which is a minor cannabinoid, or THCVA, or anything like that, it's so long as the THC content meet the requirements, so you're okay to grow it. But right. Again, that's why I think it's very important, you know, to consider the intention rather than the absolute figures. So if you grow it for fiber or grain, obviously, you know, you need to, you know, just be able to show and demonstrate that, you know, your planting seed, you know, just produce crops that meet those THC limits.
Yeah. So, it doesn't really matter. I guess when you're using it for that purpose, that, as you said, the end purpose, it's more about that fibrous material than it is anything that you might extract. Although, you know, when you're trying to think about ways that you could appeal to hemp growers beyond just the, you know, raw material, and how could they maybe turn some of that cash into some, obviously when things are a little bit more legalized, but when you're considering turning that into a more profitable crop, that would make sense in that scenario as well. Even if you wanted to keep it under the hemp, you're just grabbing something from the garden is what it looked like on the screen.
No, actually, so that's my favorite, you know, just a breeding line, advanced breeding line, you know, just that I, you know, just I was working on. I when it comes to hemp, I try not to use the word strain. I don't know why we're trying to reinvent the wheel. So where we, with any other crop, we call it cultivar or varieties or anything like that. So I stick with variety or, you know, cultivar. So, but this one is not a cultivar. This was, you know, just advanced breeding line. So it wasn't registered yet. So, yeah.
Right. And I was looking through, you've actually written quite a few research papers along the journey, or you've been involved in. I'm not sure if they're exclusively just yours or if they're collaborations, but if you had to choose, say, one out of the bunch, what's your favorite, most famous piece? Is there anything in there that's...
Mitch, you're going to put me in trouble now, so all right?
And preferably, have you got one? But like a is sort of understandable at a 12-year-old level.
For me.
Well, I was asking for myself, but all right, I'll throw you under the bus.
Most of the papers, you know, we publish, it's in collaboration with universities or research organizations. And it's mainly on germplasm development, pre-reading and breeding occasional papers on other aspects, like, you know, just food quality and antioxidant properties of hemp. But students, you know, who I worked with, you know, just, and, you know, had a privilege of supervising him, Dr. Luca De Prado from Murdoch University. So he finished his PhD just, I think about 6 months ago. He's going to kill me, you know, so if I don't know, you know, the exact time. So, and then he published, you know, just a series of fantastic papers on, one of them was on the phytoremediation aspects of hemp, which I like. And then the effect of nitrogen and phosphorus and other aspects, not only on biomass, on all, but also on cannabinoid levels. So whether you want, you know, if you want, you know, to increase the CBD, should you use more phosphorus or less phosphorus, or more nitrogen or less nitrogen? So there are lots of talk about, you know, just the varieties, but one thing that is missing, two things. One is that, you know, genetic component is one thing you can, you know, just address, and it's in control. So environments, barely you can control it. The last one is the management of it. So management, when it comes to the management, excuse me, It's a fertilizer management, irrigation, pesticide management, all of those. And there is all, you know, just interaction between genetics and environment and the management. And that's why I like, you know, those papers, because it looks as, you know, the more complex scenario, not, you know, just looking at individual component in isolation. So you need, you know, to look at the whole thing together. And, you know, it's very important, you know, just to have that, you know, just put it in the context of what you want to achieve. So you can't, you know, drive a truck at 200 kilometers an hour, if you put a, you know, just Ferrari's engine in it, so it doesn't work. So you need to have the right, you know, agronomy and right engine, which is the variety, so then works together, you know, to achieve what you want to achieve.
So can I just, one thing, I'm not sure if you touched on it already, but we talked earlier about the THC thresholds. Are there CBD thresholds for industrial hemp?
At the food at the food application, not at the crop, so at the crop level. So for the crop, the way I understand, so you only need, you know, to meet the requirements of THC. But when you produce the product, food product, and then there are very specific standards as set up by FSANS. So, and you have to demonstrate that your product meets all of those requirements. Like, I think for THC is 5 ppm or something like that. I don't remember exactly what was it. And then there is another one for CBD and or other cannabinoids as well. So, and then also for total cannabinoids.
But does that then mean, sorry to jump in, but does that mean then that in the industrial context, because it's not made for food grading, that say a hemp t-shirt or, you know, a hemp textile might actually contain CBD? I'm just, or is that a far-fetched idea?
Well, I mean, because, you know, just usually when you grow the hemp crop, so for fiber, it's quite different from, you know, just basically grain for food application. For fiber, mainly you use a stem, really. So you're not using anything else. Right. And as we know, you know, just near to non-cannabinoid content on the stem itself. So you would be quite safe. But that's a good idea if you can blend CBD with the garment.
Yeah.
If you, you know, just hear more about those, you may want, you know, to look at some of the patents already submitted in the US for those kind of stuff. Yeah.
That's interesting. There's a little project to spin off out of good old AltMed chat.
I've actually got an interesting one around terpenes, because technically you could produce terpenes from a hemp plant. We have this situation in Australia where anything from the cannabis plant is considered a scheduled medicine, even terpenes that are cannabis derived. But I'm wondering if they're hemp derived, they're still kind of cannabis derived, but not by definition. So adding hemp terpenes into, we hear about botanical terpenes all the time, taken from lavender and et cetera like this, but in terms of taking it from hemp, you're really getting a cannabis terpene derived. But I'm just trying to think on the legislation, whether that would count if you wanted to use that for cannabis medicine. Do you have any insight on that? I'm not sure.
I'm not, to be honest, across that component of the legislation. But again, if you think about the intent, I think that you would be questioned on that to say, well, if you wanted to grow a crop and the intention here is to extract terpene, obviously you need a different license, not just a license.
Why? But terpenes aren't considered active technically. So it's like they're not a scheduled narcotic. So if you were growing hemp for ingestion purposes, then why would terpenes be any different? I'm just wondering. I'm just asking the question. I don't know. It's got me thinking about it, actually.
Maybe that's a question for TGA. So I don't know. It may be, already you may be able to do it, but I doubt it. But
I'm going to go ask them. John's house and nothing.
That's great. Well, Amit, really grateful for your insights. It's just an area that I think a lot of people wouldn't know about, and I'm sure actually there's given that the security infrastructure, I'm guessing at farms, isn't quite as great as that for medical grade. I've probably driven past a few hemp farms, actually, just out of interest. Is there any state that's leading the way in Australia in terms of hemp farming?
Yeah, absolutely. So Tasmania is just leading that at the moment. So, and I assume, most people across Tasmania at least once came across a hemp crop. So, because some of them are very close to highways and things like that.
Right.
It's not there's no taboo anymore for them. So, that's hemp. Oh, okay. And many, many occasions, some of my trials were side by side to puppy farm. So there were puppy.
Oh, wow.
And next to it was, hemp. And it was quite easy, to grow puppy rather than hemp, because it was a lot more restrictions on that. So, and that's another question for Mitch, to add to the list.
Yeah. So
it's growing every day.
Stop into one farm to get some opioids, walk next door, get yourself some stems to make some rope. It's all happening down in Tassie.
Yeah. So, but Queensland, just is very, just basically they're developing a lot of projects as we speak. And I'm not sure if you're aware of it or not. So there is a hemp CRC initiative that, just put forward, and it led by University of Southern Queensland. So, and there would be a bid that will be submitted to government. So, and usually the way CRC works, the government match a dollar to dollar from, so input from industry and matching fund by government. I think at the moment there is about, expectation is about $80 million program across, just over 10 years. So, and involving different universities, obviously HGT just is a key partner to that MCRC as well. So, and I'm encouraging, just all of your listeners, if you haven't, heard of that, just search hemp CRC and it will pop up definitely. So we need to work together collaboratively and, to take the industrial hemp in Australia to the next level. Otherwise, before we know it, we won't have any industry at all. So And we're all into it together, basically.
Yeah, well, it does sound like the wonder crop, you know, you talk not just about its potential industrial, you know, applications, but also its regenerative properties with soil. It really is amazing. So we love the work that you're doing. And I think at some stage, Mitch, we should try and get ourselves along to visit one of these hemp farms and see it up close.
I'd say so. I'd like to visit a few more of the hemp farms out of curiosity, to be honest. So yeah, definitely.
Love to have you here. But if you're coming here for to escape the cold winter in Melbourne.
Oh, it gets up to a nice 20 degrees in Melbourne during the height of summer. No, maybe it's higher. But no, we'd love that. When we're next up in Queensland, we'll be in touch on it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Love that.
No worries. Well, thanks so much again. And really appreciate it. We'll speak soon.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
And yes, thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Take care.
Bye.
Hey guys, Andrew Dowling here.
Mitch Kurtz.
And thanks for joining us for another episode of the Ultimate Podcast.
Make sure to hit like and subscribe to stay up to date with all that we have coming.
All things Ultimate?
Yeah, that too.
Okay.